A couple of quick messages before we start. First of all, I would like to Bezos Hashem invite the Olam to a shtickle Chanukah Mesiva Bezos Hashem next week. I hope Bezos Hashem. What? Not this year. Tentatively, meanwhile, probably Tuesday night at my home. We'll be in touch about the details. Bezos Hashem. Two more messages. One message from the Ramban. I was asked to give over to somebody here in the Shir. Somebody asked the other week. What?
You get messages from the Ramban?
Yes, yes. I get messages from the Ramban. Learn the Ramban, you'll get one too. Somebody asked the other week what the name Michoel denotes. I don't know if, I don't remember who asked it and if they're here right now. Michoel. What does the name denote? Michoel HaMaluch, yeah, when we discussed it the other week. So, exactly, I was learning a Ramban this week. Apparently, it was sent my way this week. And he says that the name Michoel denotes Michoel, who is like Hashem. Okay? That's message number two. Message number three, I got a message from Hashem. We're going to talk about Mohammed in the Kuzri Shir later. I'm not doing the same thing he did. It was very interesting. There's one, we very much covered all the different angles of the Sugya of Yisurim, but there's another thing that the Kadmoini mentioned that I didn't mention, and I actually had that experience last night. So I took it as a message to mention that too. Sometimes Yisurim come as a way of preventing somebody. This is another form of Yisurim Shalava, as a way of preventing someone from doing the wrong thing, saving him from that danger. Mamish, last night I had such an experience. I was deliberating. It was something I wanted to tell somebody. I wasn't sure if it was the right thing to do or not. I won't go into more details. I was deliberating whether it was the right thing to do or not. I wasn't sure. And then last night, around the time that it would have been relevant, I got a very aggravating phone call regarding a complication of a project that I was involved in from the past. Something went awry, a lot of people were upset, and I lost sleep over it, and I spent a lot of time until we managed to work it out, and I forgot about everything else going on. By the time I remembered, my original issue wasn't relevant anymore. I concluded, Baruch Hashem, that made my decision for me. So actually, this is actually another form of Yisurim Shalava mentioned in the Kadmoinim, that sometimes it's in order to prevent a person from doing the wrong thing. So since I mamish had that experience last night, I thought I had to share it.
Should you have been aggravated throughout that aggravating thing?
What's that?
Or should you have just said, this is all good, this is...
I did, I'm proud to say that I did note that. And I said, okay, good, this is apparently what Hashem is doing to me, so... After learning the sugya for the last week or so, I should be able to at least do that. Okay.
He said he heard from a taxi cab driver, wasn't from a great Muslim. He said, the guy said he was going through something aggravating. He said, you know what, the situation is aggravating enough. Why be aggravated?
Yeah. Okay. Now we'll approach our subject. And last time we said that we would just dedicate a couple of minutes. Oh, I have it. That's okay. Shkoyach. Last time we just said we dedicate a couple of minutes addressing the subject of Yisurim V.A.V. interpersonal issues. So, I'll dedicate Mamish a couple of minutes to this just in order to give a hashlama to the picture. I want to again draw off the shla that we mentioned the other day. The shla which says, quotes the Chazal, let's say, Hanelovim veinam oilvim, those who are offended but do not offend. Shoymim cherpasam veinam yeshivim voinim, they hear themselves being put down but they do not respond. Oisim me'ava usmeichim biyisurin, they perform Hashem's will with love and they are happy with yisurin. Aleihem akosav oimer v'oyavav keteis Hashemesh begvurosa. Regarding such people, the pasuk says, the lovers of Hashem will shine as brightly as the sun coming out in its full force. So the Shlach says that this includes three levels of people accepting the specific Yisurim of being hurt by other people. Hurt as in offended. Three levels, and this very much basically encapsulates this whole subject. The first level is, or let's start with the last level. The highest level is when a person is offended, a person is hurt, and he simply rejoices. He takes it. He doesn't see it as the person. He sees it as Hashem. He sees right through the person and just relates to it as another form of Yisurim from Hashem. And he rejoices, and that's that. That's the highest level. Now, there are lower levels which are also great madregas. When we're talking lower levels, we're talking relative here. But that end that it says his lovers are like the sun shining in its full glory are said about all three levels. And a person has to know where he's holding. The second level is Shaimim Kharpasavainim Mishivim Vainim. People who hear themselves being put down and they don't respond. And then the next level is Ne'lovim Vainim Oilvim. They're hurt, but they don't hurt. They do respond, but they don't hurt back. Meaning as follows. Sometimes you have a person who's offended and he's hurt, but he's not going to respond at all. That's the middle level. Simply not going to respond. He's going to swallow it, keep quiet, and that's that. Then there's the lower level, which is among the three great levels listed, lower again, lowest of these great levels, but it's also a great level, is the one who is hurt but doesn't hurt back. He does respond. He responds, but not in an offensive way. Sometimes, like you asked the other night, by keeping it in, a person will just harbor resentment. If that's going to be the case, then you should respond. Respond not as in to lash back. Respond in a controlled way. An angry response is missing the opportunity. But sometimes you'll come to the person and you'll say, I want you to know that you hurt me. In a cool, collected way. I'm not going to get tit for tat. I'm not going to wait around the bend the next time I have an opportunity. I'll put him in exactly the same situation. He humiliated me in public. I'm not going to look for the next time I can get him back. I take it the right way. But it's going to be very hard for me to get this out of my stomach. If you know you're not going to be able to get out of your stomach, then actually you should tell the person what you did hurt me, and you should ask me for mechila. That's the Rambam says. What? To tell the person you hurt me? Not to harbor a grudge is loisita. And therefore, yes, you should deal with it. But yes and no. I'll get to loisita in a minute. We need it. So therefore, yes, if you know that you're not going to be able to overcome that resentment, it's going to sit and it's going to fester inside you, you should come to the person and you should tell him, but you did hurt me, I want you to know that I resent that in a controlled way. And then let him ask you for forgiveness and be forgiving. Once he asks you for forgiveness, you should be able to let go. That's that level. That the Rambam says, harboring resentment can be transgressing the Isra of Loisisma Sochicha Bilvavecha. Don't hate your fellow in your heart. Now, hate is a strong word, but really any form of antagonism that you feel towards the other fellow that you're just holding in can be a transgression of this Isra. And therefore, you should come up front to tell him, that hurt, I am upset, you really should ask me for mechila. Once he does ask you, let go. You see that he's contrite, let go. If he's not contrite, that's a different story. That's a different story. You don't have to be meichel him until he's ready to show that he does regret it. Yes, it was a slip of the tongue. Whatever it is, I apologize. That's level number one. Level number two is if a person is capable of just getting over it, that's a greater level of just letting it go. Completely letting it go. And then the third level is where a person actually just rejoices. He sees it as an opportunity and he rejoices. Because the truth is, it's very tough. This is one of the most challenging areas. And it's like the Mefarshim say, a person who's upset because he was offended does not transgress the Isra of Loisita. He shouldn't bear a grudge. Because the Iraim says, a man can't be like a stone that's just emotionless. People have feelings. It's part of what being human is. But if you learn to relate to it this way, as a mamish seeing a gold mining when somebody offends you, you can get a little bit of a different mindset. And that's really what it is. The Gemara says, Toila Eretz al Blima. A person, I forgot exactly the words, but something to the effect of Misha boilim piv bishas miriva, a person who can just keep his mouth shut when he's provoked, the whole world stands in his foot. That's the way the Gemara puts it. I forgot the exact lashon, but that's what the Gemara says. You have to realize that you're being handed a gold mine. When you're being hurt, when you're being provoked, you are being handed a gold mine. You're being handed a ticket to eternal bliss. When you think of it in that way, it can make it easier to swallow. Now, there was actually a story. Yitzchok Zilberstein tells a story of a woman who got into one of these things with her neighbor. And this neighbor was apparently an esti type. She showed up at a close family simcha. And as this woman is sitting there with her close relatives, she showed up and really told her everything she feels about her. Yelled at her mom in front of everybody, humiliated her in a terrible way. This woman was sitting there stunned from the attack. Before she could even react, she suddenly heard somebody desperately whispering in her ear, "Don't react, don't react, don't react, please, don't react, now listen to me." So she turns around, like she was going from one shock to another shock, that she was just stunned by the attack. Now she turns around, she sees an unknown woman sitting next to her, and she said, "I saw what just happened. I want to tell you something. I haven't had children for many years. I have no children. And we tried many things." And she said, Reb Chaim Kanievsky suggested an Eitzah. Reb Chaim Kanievsky said that a person who remains silent when he's provoked has a very, very great power. Find someone in that situation and ask them for a bracha. So she said, "Now I'm asking you for a bracha." And the way the story continues is that, yeah, she gave the bracha and this woman had the child. This is a story related by Reb Yitzchok Zilberstein. I don't usually like to tell these types of stories, but this is an authoritative figure telling the story. So this is something to note. Now, it was also raised in the more specific and delicate context of one's wife. So you know, also I want to just answer this question briefly on three levels. Also on three levels. Now I'll mention in parentheses, my Rebbe was once approached by a couple who wanted to discuss their issues with him. So the husband came beforehand and took him aside and sat down with him and explained to him all of his wife's problems and why his wife has this problem and her issues and this and that. So when my Rebbe was telling me this story, he said, "By the way, whenever somebody explains somebody else to me, it tells me nothing at all about the subject. It tells me a lot more about the person himself. I can usually gain a lot of insight about a person when they tell me about somebody else." Whatever it is, he responded to this fellow as follows. He said, "You have your wife all figured out. I see you mamish figured out her whole personality. You have it all worked out." The guy said, "Yeah." And he said, "There's one dimension of your wife's life that you are completely in the dark about." "What do you mean? I live with her all the time." "So no. There's one element of her life that you are completely in the dark about, and it's a very, very major fact, part of her life. But you have no idea at all what it's like." He said, "What's that?" He said, "You have no idea what it's like being your wife. Because yes, you've lived with your wife for 20 years, you never for a moment experienced what she's experienced all the time." And he said, "I want to add something. Now I understand pshat in the bracha, shalo yosani isha. Why do we say shalo yosani isha? Right? Thank Hashem for not making us women." He said, "Because women have husbands, we don't." Okay. That was just in parentheses. Oh, wow. He's going to do with it. Okay, so now...
Like, what kind of, it seems like, don't get a time to come angry,
I'll address that momentarily, Bli Neder. Now, just okay, having said that funny little anecdote, that's not really my point. In a more serious way, when we're relating to the issue of the very delicate issue of between a man and his wife, this also I want to approach on three levels. Your wife says something hurtful, and you're hurt. So, think about a couple. First of all, always, this is a rule of thumb, always is don't respond immediately. It's never a good idea. It's never good. Don't respond immediately. That just turns into bad acoustics. But number one is, first of all, think, 1 minute, there's one possibility to consider. Maybe I deserved it. Generally unconceivable, but something to think about for a minute. Maybe I deserve it. And so you say, okay, fine. But let's say you didn't. So here also, there are three approaches a person should take. Often, it's much harder when dealing with a wife, especially if you have a good relationship, to let it go. Because when a person has a really good relationship, small things can really sour the feelings. Sometimes when your whole relationship with your wife is a yelling competition, so a little more, a little less doesn't make a difference. It's like they say, you know, the scales that they use to weigh trucks won't pick up on a safety pin. But the scales that they use to weigh diamond dust will pick up on anything. If you have a very, very deep and subtle relationship with your wife, often offenses can hit deeper and can hurt more. And therefore, sometimes it won't work to let it go because the relationship, even for a couple of days, will be on a plane that's chaval. And in that case, the idea is again to do like we described beforehand, in a controlled way, to say, you probably didn't mean it this way, but this hurt me. Again, not to lose it, not to just respond naturally, in a controlled way. Be able to say that. Then, again, if you have a good relationship, chances are that will bring about an apology, and things will be onto a good track. Often, these things can even bring it onto a better track. But then there are the situations where you know that something came from, sometimes you have to hear the tone behind it. She had a stressful day, and what she's saying is, my day, the kids gave me a very hard time today. And she expressed it in that way. You have to be able to hear the language. If you can relate to it in that way and say, again, like we said before, this hurt, but I'm going to take it as an opportunity. If it is the type of thing that you do figure, if I view it in this way, I'll be able to get by it without it sticking in my stomach. Again, this is an opportunity of not responding. This is an opportunity. We can use our wives. They present us with many such opportunities, and we present them with plenty also. Don't worry, we're turning our wives into great people too. Okay. That's as far as that subject goes. Now we'll move on. Sorry, one thing I said I was going to address momentarily. The cases of Amoraim, where we find that somebody said something inappropriate or the like, and they zapped them. That's a different story. When you're talking about a person of a certain stature, who by his very essence represents Torah, he does not have a right to forego these types of things, because it will often be taken as an affront to the Torah itself. And in these situations, sometimes we'll have to act on behalf of the Torah. Now this is very tricky, because it's very easy. A person who learns a Masechta or two to say, it's not me, it's my Torah, and therefore, Okay, so therefore we leave that to the Amoraim, or to the great people who are able to determine, I am on the level that I can't let this sort of thing go by because it's actually a slight to the Torah. But it's to be taken in the context of a slight to the Torah, not a personal slight. Okay. Now we'll move on. Two, four, six, eight. 10 lines down. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Hail with Beis, I'm sorry. That's an important piece of information. Hail with Beis, 10 lines down. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, second word on the line. now we're basically going to be tying up the sugya of Yisurin. Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Negaim ubanim einam Yisurin shalavam. Negaim, tsaras, leprosy, and children, meaning tsaras that a person has with children, are not Yisurin shalavam. Now, what does this mean? What does this mean? Right now we're assuming that it means a person who loses the opportunity to have children, either by losing his children, chas v'shalom, or by not having children. Those are Yisurim of children. Now, so the Gemara is going to question these things one by one. Onegayim loy, leprosy is not considered Yisurim shalava. V'atanya, it says in the Braisa, Kol mi sheyesh by echad me'aba maroitz negayim alalu. Anyone who has one of these four shades of leprosy, those are the classic forms of leprosy. Einam ela mizbeach kapara. It's nothing other than a mizbeach that provides kapara. So what are you saying that it's not Yisurim shalava? So the Gemara answers, and this is the point that we've been hammering away at. Here the Gemara basically says it. Mizbeach kapara havu. Sure, it's there to atone for you. Yisurim shalava lo yavu. But it's not Yisurim shalava. Meaning, as we discussed the other day, Yisurim shalava is a very specific category of Yisurim. But even the things that don't quite fit that specific category, at the end of the day, are Yisurim that have a form of Ava, just it's a different form of Ava. They're coming to help cleanse you. Hashem is interested in cleansing you. He wants you to make it okay to Olam Haba. And therefore, He's coming to help you work it out. So it's not the Yisurim shalava, but it's another form of Hashem's care for you. So He's saying, yes, leprosy is always meant to be taken as atonement, not as that special category of Yisurim shalava that may have nothing at all to do with an avir. The Eba is saying, or another answer can be, sometimes it is Yisurim shalava, sometimes it's not, depending on halon v'halahu. It depends if it's for us, i.e., the people of Eretz Yisrael, that's what Rabbi Yochanan was, or for the people of Chutz La'aretz. For the people of Eretz Yisrael, Rashi explains, it's not considered Yisurim Shalava. Why? Because in Eretz Yisrael, where the laws of Tumah and Tahara were practiced, a leper had to leave the camp. So it's as though Hashem is saying, I don't want you here. It's kicking him out. Now, that could be a wake-up call. Yisurim Shalava, it's not. Yisurim Shalava, as we've seen, is drawing a person closer. These are not drawing a person closer. This is kicking a person out until he reforms. But in Bavel, where the laws of Tum and Tahara are not practiced, there is no such element, and therefore it could be Yisurim Shalava.
If you are no Averis and no official Torah.
Right.
Why do you have a Havah mean that something which is a Kapara is a Yisurim Shalava? Kapara means you have Averis.
Oh, well, so the truth is that this depends on how we're going to understand Yisurim Shalava. We've presented a few approaches. One of the approaches is that Yisurim Shalava means after you did your self-inspection and didn't come up with Averis, Yisurim Shalava might be atoning for those more subtle things that you're not conscious of or not conscious of anymore. That's how the Ramban understands Yisurim Shalava. According to that, it's well understood. Yisurim Shalava could be atonement. What happens when a tzaddik is puts through Yisurim Shalava where he can't learn or daven? That the Gemara addressed earlier. And the Gemara had two opinions that said that Yisurim that preclude learning or davening are not Yisurim Shalava. But then the Gemara concluded that that's not the case. Those can also be Yisurim Shalava, even though they're coming at the expense of Torah and davening. That tzar itself can be Yisurim Shalava. What's that? Apparently, did it say that not? I don't know. Apparently. Okay. Viba is saying. Or another answer could be, Habitzina, habifarhesi. It depends if the leprosy appears under the clothing, concealed, or if it appears on the outside. If it appears on the outside, that is a disgrace. When Hashem is disgracing a person, it's different than afflicting a person. Disgracing a person is a sign of displeasure. Afflicting a person is not necessarily. So therefore it depends. If it's concealed under the clothing, or it's just an issue of disease, pain, can be yisurin shalava. If it's in the open where it's a disgrace to the person, not. But again, it's atonement. It could be a wake-up call to improve. But disfigured is not necessarily disfigured. Them is more affliction than disgrace. The point there wasn't a disgrace. Well, this answer is not differentiating between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. It's differentiating just between whether people can see it on your body or not. If it's under the clothing, that could be Yisurim Shalava. If it's in a place where everyone can see, it's not. Okay. So the Gemara here is introducing... Why are these things defined as non-Yisurim Shalava? The Gemara is introducing... Really what the Gemara is saying is that Yisurim Shalava come in a certain form. Yisurim Shalava will not take the form of Hashem distancing a person from His presence. That was the first instance of the Gemara. And the second instance of the Gemara is, really what the Gemara is saying is also, it's qualifying Yisurim Shalava. Yisurim Shalava will take the form of pain, it will not take the form of disgrace. It will not take the form of ignominy. Is that how you say it, I think? Okay. Disgrace is actually a blow to the dignity of the human being. It's the dignity of the human being is a sublime thing. Hashem won't compromise a person's greatness in order to show his love for him.
So the example is the rough game about the woman screaming this other woman in the public gathering is disgraceful.
What's that? At the end of the day, there's still a difference between when a disgrace comes directly from Hashem or from a person. Disgrace coming from a person sometimes can be an honor. Okay. Fine. So that's as far as Negoim goes. Now what about the second element? Children. Banim loy, children suffering because of misfortune with children. Is not Yisurim Shalava? Hey Chidami, what exactly do we mean by children? If we mean when a person has children and they die, we're saying that's not called Yisurim Shalava. That can't be. Because Rabbi Yechanan said, Rabbi Yechanan had a very interesting method of being Menachem Avelim. When he would go for Nichum Avelim, he would come in, sit down, and he would produce from his pocket a small bone. And he would tell the Avelin, this is the bone of the 10th son I lost. That was his form of Nichum Avelin. So if so, Rabbi Yechanan lost 10 children. And he's using that to comfort others, it must be that it is a form of Yisurim Shalav. Otherwise, where's the comfort? So, what's that? Chatzi nechama, something to that. But yet, Gemara is assuming that if Rabbi Yechanan was preventing it as a comfort, he was presenting it as an absolute comfort. Rashi says the very fact that this would happen to Rabbi Yechanan is a raya that it's Yisurim Shalava. But Taisus says that's not necessarily so. What's that? Oh, so we're kind of posing a contradiction between two of his own statements, or two of his own implications. By comforting other people in this way, he's very strongly implying that it is Yisurim Shalav. So the Gemara answers, you're right. Losing children is certainly Yisurim Shalav. It depends if a person never had them at all, or if he had, but then they died. Meaning, for a person to have children and lose them is called Yisurim Shel Ahava. A person who never had children at all is not. Now again, of course, that sounds rather harsh. Here also, we just have to put this back into the perspective that we were discussing before. That this doesn't mean that it's not coming as a result of Hashem's Ahava. It means that it's not in that specific category of Yisurim Shel Ahava that achieve the specific purposes that we discussed. But again, could be that Hashem is saying this person is not davening enough. At the end of the day, any form of suffering can be taken as, can be utilized as an expression of Hashem's care for us. But that special class of Yisurim Shel Ahava, it's not, for whatever reason. Okay. The Mefarshim asked the question. That's what Rav Shlomo is asking. How did Rabbi Yochanan carry around the bone? Isn't it supposed to be buried? Or the way the other Mefarshim asked, it's tame. So that's the answer that many of the Mefarshim give, that it was a tooth. A tooth doesn't have to be buried, and it's not tame. In fact, they said there was a tooth that the kid had lost during his lifetime. It wasn't from the dead body at all. What's that? The next answer that the Mefarshim give is that it was less than a barley piece size of bone, which is not mitame and is not really, doesn't really count as anything. That's what he carried around. Okay, the Gemara elsewhere, the Mefarshim bring that it was really a very tragic story, Rabbi Yochanan's story, one of the greatest people. He had 9 children who died crib death. 9 children crib death. The 10th fell into a boiling hot vat, Rachmana Litzlan, and it was his bone that Rabbi Yochanan carried around. He said that he had 1/11th surviving child. That was Rav Masna, who became a Talmud of Shmuel. He sent him to Bavel to learn. Okay. On that somber note, we'll move on to the next. We're going to basically conclude this discussion with a few incidents that will give us some more perspective on the subject. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Cholash. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba once fell ill. Ali gabe Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan came to visit him. Amarle. So he asked him, Chavimin alecho Yisurim? Do you endear these Yisurim? Do you want them? Now, after the whole sugi that we saw, we'd expect an enthusiastic yes. Omale, but Rabbi Chiya answered, Lo yehein velo yischaron. I'm willing to forego the Yisurim and the Schar. Omale, so Rabbi Yochanan told him, Havli yadoch. Okay, so give me your hands. Yav le yode. So, he gave him his hand. And he pulled him out of bed, and that was that. Now, okay, let's just understand. Why did he respond this way? Why did he say lo yehein velo yischaron? Isn't that a form of not accepting it the right way? The answer is no. As long as he was sick, the Mefarshim say, sure, he accepted it willingly. But when he's asked, do you want a way out of it, or would you rather keep them? I want a way out of it. It's like we kept saying, you can go to a doctor. When you go to a doctor, you're also saying, lo yehein velo yischaron. I'm willing to give up the Yisurim and the Schar. So, why is it obvious? Maybe he wants to continue. There were people who chose Yisurim. But the ones of Reb Shimon chose Yisurim. You're not supposed to look for Yisurim. In general, there were people who did. Right. But that's what I'm getting at. Why did he forego this car? These were the Amoraim. They would be willing to handle anything for a little bit more Elam Haba. But the answer is that what Rabbi Chiya bar Abba was saying was, Lamaisa, this is compromising my spiritual pursuits. Now, as long as Hashem imposed it upon me, that is my spiritual pursuit. But when I'm given the choice, my choice has to be to maximize my spiritual opportunities in the best way possible. This is always a fine line. We daven every day not to get Yisurin. Sorry, not to get Nisyonis, not to be tested. We also daven in Kriya Shema not to have Yisurin. L'mais, it's the Nisyonis that make us great. L'mais, it's the Nisyonis that define our purpose in life. Yet we daven not to have them. Our job is to try to function in the best way possible. To try to perform spiritually in the most optimal way. We leave it to Hashem to map out our plan for us. Whatever He sends our way, we take. But whatever is up to us, we try to be in a state that we can serve Hashem with the greatest peace of mind, the best way possible. And that's what Rabbi Elazar was saying. As long as I had it, I accept. You're offering me the way out? Once it's up to me, I don't accept. I want out. Next incident. Similar incident. Rabbi Yechanan Cholash. This time it was Rabbi Yechanan who fell ill. The one who was the healer in the previous case. Ali Gabe Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina came to him to visit. Omalei. So I asked him the golden question. Chavivin Alecho Yisurin. Do you endear the Yisurin? Are you enjoying? You want to keep them? Omalei, and Rabbi Yechanan responded, which by we see by now is the right answer. I'm willing to forego them and the schar. I can make my own spiritual profits. Omalei, so Rabbi Chanina told Rabbi Yechanan, Hav li yodach, give me your hand. Yav le yode, he gave him his hand, ve'ukme, and he pulled him out of bed again, sent him back to Beis Medrash. So now the Gemara asks, one minute. He's encroaching on Rabbi Yechanan's territory. That was Rabbi Yechanan's invention. Amai, why did Rabbi Chanina need to do this? Lukim Rabbi Yechanan l'nafshei. Why didn't Rabbi Yechanan pull himself out of bed? He pulled Rabbi Chia out of bed. Amri. So the Gemara answers, Ein chavush matir atzmai bibeis asurin. When a person is locked in jail, he can't let himself out. You have a key that might be able to open it from the outside. But if there's no keyhole on the inside, you can't let yourself out. Okay. Now, I'll just give a little bit more. What is the understanding of this? What's the pshat? Why not? The answer is you have to understand that it was a schus that helped the other person get better. The fact that Rabbi Yochanan was being mishtatef in his pain, the fact that Rabbi Yochanan was joining his pain was a schus. That schus was able to contribute to his recovery. But the fact that you are joining yourself in your pain doesn't really provide you with a schus. That's not a schus to make you better. So therefore, he needed somebody else to do it for him.
So also, I was thinking maybe it's not to do with it. Just same way like Yaakov Avinu, when he wasn't the schus, but had to work with Yoda last year. The person was sick, so he's not.
That's a very interesting thought. You're suggesting that maybe it's because he wasn't in the right state of mind.
Yeah.
So the Mefarshim say it in a little bit of a different way. They say it in a simpler way than you're saying it. The Chasam Sofer and others say this, that Chasam Sofer and the Re'im both say this, that when a person is sick, he can't daven properly, he can't daven with the same settled mind, and therefore needed someone else to do the job for him. But you're adding another very interesting point. I didn't think of that. I didn't see that actually stated. When a person is sick, he's not in a happy state of mind. When a person is not in a happy state of mind, he doesn't get the same divine, the same Ruach HaKodesh. And the Shekhinah comes upon a person who's happy, not on a person who's sad. That's a very chashuv insight. I didn't see it stated, but seems to be emes. Next, similar incident. Rabbi Elazar Cholash. Rabbi Elazar became sick. Ali Gaber Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbi Yechanan came to visit him. Now a similar story, but this one takes a very interesting twist. Chazed av kogoni bevayis ofel. Rabbi Yechanan saw that he was in a dark, his home was dark. Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas was a very poor man, extremely poor. You see in other Gemaras. He probably simply couldn't afford a lamp. Galia lidar e. Rabbi Yochanan pulled up his sleeve and exposed his arm. Then nafal nahayra. When he exposed his arm, more of his arm, it lit up the whole room. And the room was suddenly illuminated from the brightness of Rabbi Yochanan's arm. What? His skin glowed. Yeah. Now, chazia da'avik kabochi. Then, when the room was lit up, Rabbi Yochanan was able to see Rabbi Elazar. He saw him weeping. Kabachi Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Elazar, the sick person, was weeping. Omale. So Rabbi Yochanan said, Amai kabachis? Why are you weeping? Imishum Torah de layepshas? Is it because you feel that you didn't learn enough Torah? Meaning, maybe he felt that he was about to die. And he was young. He didn't accomplish everything he wanted to. Shanino. He said, don't worry about that. It says, it doesn't matter whether a person achieves a lot or a little, as long as his heart is directed toward Shamayim. Now, this will have to be qualified. This is not the heart in the right place that the irreligious like to tell us. The main thing is that your heart is in the right place. It doesn't really matter what you do. That's not what's being stated here. What is being stated, we'll see. We'll see. But right now he's telling him, meanwhile, we'll translate it as long as you did your best. It doesn't matter how much you actually accomplished. So, that's not reason to cry, because you didn't achieve enough during your lifetime. Is it because you didn't have parnasa? Like all Adam Zeichel Ishtei Shulchanas. Look, you merited the table of spirituality. You wanted the table of material blessing as well. Not everybody gets both tables. Ve'imi shumbane. And is it because of children that you lost? So Rabbi Yochanan had his steady answer to that. Dein gromada asiroi bir. Here's the bone of the 10th child I lost. So Omalei, so the truth is, we'll have to note each of these different stages. But Rabbi Elazar said it wasn't any of those three. Omar Lei, Lai Shufra de Boli Ba'afrika Bochina. What I'm weeping about has nothing to do with me. So when I saw your beauty, I said that he exposed his arm and it cast light in the whole room. When I saw your beauty, I began weeping at the thought that this beauty is going to rot in the ground. Omar Lei, so Rabbi Yochanan said, oh, is that what you're crying about? Aldov vadai kabochis. Oh, then you're right. That's certainly reason to cry. Ubachu travayu. And they both wept together. Now, adahachi vahachi. Then Rabbi Yochanan said, one minute, I'm here for a reason. Meanwhile, Amale, he asked him, right, we got to get back on routine. Chavivin olecho yisurin? Do you endear the yisurin? Amale loy. He told him, no, I don't want them or the schar. Omar Lei, so he told him, okay, habli yadach. So give me your hand. Yav le yode ve'ukman. So he gave him his hand and he pulled him out of bed. Same ending as the previous stories. Okay, now there's obviously a lot that needs to be addressed in really understanding what exactly went on here. I just want to address point by point, just to put this whole discussion into perspective. So first of all, as far as the first point goes, he told him, you're worried that you didn't accomplish as much as you wanted in life, it doesn't matter. Really, this is a very profound point. What he's telling him is, Rabbi Elazar definitely utilized his opportunities to the maximum. Rabbi Yochanan is telling him, the fact that you see people who achieved more than you because they had more time to learn, because they had a longer life, makes absolutely no difference. A person value in the next world is judged only by the extent to which he maximized his opportunities. People are judged only subjectively in the next world. There's no objective judgment. In this world, there's such a thing as objective greatness. Person knows all of Shas, etc., etc. He's a great man. You have to honor him. But in the next world, it doesn't work that way. In the next world, a person's status is only based on you were given opportunities, how did you maximize them? Therefore, the Gemara, the Yerushalmi, for example, says, Rabbi Bun, one of the Amiroim in the Yerushalmi, was lifted at the age of 28. So Rabbi Zeira gave a hesped, died at the age of 28. Other Amiroim lived for more than 100. Wasted. So Rabbi Zeira gave a hesped and he said the following pasuk. He said, Mesuka shnasa oived imaat imabe yechel. He said that the hard worker's sleep is sweet, whether he eats a lot or a little. Meaning, he didn't manage to achieve 100 years of Torah learning. He achieved 28. But he was a worker. His entire life he spent pushing himself. And therefore, it doesn't matter, make a difference how much he actually achieved. So the Maharal puts this into a bit of a added perspective, which really makes it very simple. I'll put it in the perspective of the humorous little incident that depending on whether you're Hasidish or non-Hasidish, we have to change the figures in the story. They say it about the Balatanya with the Magid of Mizrich. That's the Hasidish version. The non-Hasidish version is about the Vilna Gaon with the Dubna Magid. Most stories have to have a few versions depending on your denomination. Okay? We can probably produce a Sfardi version also if we want. But whatever it is, the way the story goes is that this great person asked the Magid to give him Musar, the greatest person of the generation. The Magid said, how can I give you Musar? I'm nothing compared to you. But he insisted. So finally the Magid told him, you know what? I just had an insight. I can give you Musar because we're not all that different. And he explained. He said, look, in most areas we're the same. Why? Because everything that you don't know, I also don't know. So, as far as that goes, we're the same. We're also the same in another way. Everything that I know, you also know. So we're the same in that respect too. So what's the only difference between us? Those things that you know and I don't know. So we're the same on two counts, we're different in one count. But then his punchline was, this is punch, literally. He said, but that difference between what I know and what you know, what is that in comparison to what we both don't know? That was his punchline. And the way the story goes, that whoever it was, Rabbi X, burst into tears. So the Maharal was before both of these people, so he certainly didn't tell that story. But, well, we can actually take it a step further once the story is on this level and say that the Maharal prophesied it. But no, he doesn't. He just says that basically when it comes to achievement in Torah, what's the difference? How much you actually, once you were working your whole life, what's the difference how much you actually achieved? You say that the person who achieved more, who covered more, is on a greater level. The person who covered more, it's like you have Mount Everest. And you have two people who are scraping away at the tip of Mount Everest. Two different sides of it. One person managed to scrape away an eighth of an inch. But the other guy got almost all the way to the bottom. He scraped away an inch and a half. When you're talking about Mount Everest, what's the difference between an eighth of an inch and a half? What do you mean, what's the difference? It's a vast difference. It's 10 times as much. 12 times as much. Yeah, but they're both nothing. The Maharal says, Torah, you're talking about fully learning the Torah, fully encompassing the breadth and scope of the Torah. Forget about it. If you're Moshe Rabbeinu, you barely scrape the tip of the iceberg. It all boils down to one thing. Your capacity. How much did you fill it? That's the only thing that counts in the next world. And I want to put this into one more perspective, because I've often heard Bali Tshuva say, what a shame, 35 wasted years before I actually got on the right path. That is not true. If a person becomes a Baal Tshuva at the age of 35, and then, let's say, passes away at the age of 60, he's a person who was meant to live for 25 years. Again, the question is, how much do you maximize your opportunities? As soon as the opportunities were presented to you, you took advantage. That means you were born then. Just Hashem wanted you to be born in a state of having experienced the old world, because that's your challenge in life. Some people Hashem wants to be born without any experience at all. That's a baby who's born at the age of zero. Sometimes Hashem wants the person to be born with a good understanding of what the world is about, having tasted all the different things. Now, go ahead in life. So everything before that was just a pregnancy. It was just leading up to it. It's mamish like Rabbi Bun in the Yerushalmi. He lived for 28 years. That was his purpose in life. That's also part of understanding our purpose is to maximize our opportunities, and that's all. Okay. Now, the next point that we'll have to address, but I think this we're already going to wait with for tomorrow, is what exactly is going on behind this idea of weeping because of the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan that's going to rot in the ground. I'll just give you something to ruminate over. Rabbi Yochanan, as we're seeing expressed here in the Gemara, and as the Gemara states explicitly elsewhere, was one of the most good-looking people of his time. He was a man of outstanding beauty, one of the most beautiful people in his generation. And now, if we put that together with another two Gemaras, we come up with something very interesting. But we'll leave the answer to this tomorrow. Gemara in Bava Metzia tells us that Rabbi Yochanan was extremely heavy. Extremely heavy. Unusually so. Not regular heavy. That's number one. There's another Gemara. You see, Rabbi Yochanan's beard didn't grow well. Put all that together with what we're being told, that he was one of the most beautiful people in existence. I'll leave you to wonder about that, and we'll discuss it on Thursday, Be'ezus Hashem.